Terrorist acts in Russia have been making headlines this week. Twin bombings in the town of Volgograd have claimed the lives of at least 30, with dozens more being injured.
The bombings come just weeks before the city of Sochi hosts the Winter Olympics, raising security concerns at a time when all eyes will be on Russia.
Helping us now to make some sense of the situation is Christopher Swift. He is an adjunct professor of national security studies at Georgetown University and an international lawyer at Foley & Lardner. Christopher, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you, Gene. It's a pleasure to be with you today.
I want to start out with the city of Volgograd itself. A lot of people might remember it as Stalingrad. But why are we seeing these bombings here, do you suppose?
Well, there are two reasons. The first is opportunistic, and the second is strategic. And let me answer each of those elements in reverse. Volgograd is one of the largest cities in southern Russia, and it's a major transportation hub. So if you're traveling by bus or you're traveling by train, which a lot of people in Russia do, or even if you're traveling by airplane, there's a fair chance that if you're coming from northern or central or eastern Russia and going to locations in the south like Sochi or Rostov-on-Don or some of the other cities, that you're going to go through Volgograd. And so by targeting the transportation infrastructure in Volgograd, the terrorists involved in these two bombings this past week were essentially sending a message to the Russian government in Moscow saying, you know, we can compromise you at this particular choke point. We can take advantage of all of these weaknesses you have in advance of the Olympics. Now, the opportunistic side is this is about as far north into Russian territory as the Caucasus Emirate, that's the name of the terrorist syndicate operating in the region, has been able to get in recent years. It's been since 2010 that they've, you know, the last time they had a major operation in Moscow was 2010 or 2011. Since then, they've mostly been focused on the North Caucasus region, sometimes in Krasnodar, which is another southern region, and the furthest north they've been able to get in the last couple of years has been Volgograd.
And so
those are the two reasons why this city's in the news.
And really, that opportunistic and strategic element there, they can really have an outsized impact. These two bombings, you know, there are people killed and all of that, but even so, it really does send a message, and it's almost larger than it might appear to be at first blush.
Yeah, and that's exactly right. You know, having read the Russian press and having spent, you know, the last 15 years of my life studying this particular group, including, you know, doing interviews with rebels and, you know, being out in the field in Dagestan and the Dagestan-Chechnya border, it's my impression that the first of these two bombings, a woman by the name of Oksana Aslanova, was actually trying to get on a passenger train bound from Volgograd north to Moscow. And you've got to remember that the weekend right before the New Year's holiday is the most important travel weekend for Russians and Russian families. New Year's is the biggest celebration of the year. Orthodox Christian, Christmas this year falls on the 7th of January. And that two-week period sort of starting right before the new year, that's when everybody takes vacation during the winter. So getting on a train and detonating a weapon that looks like it was made of plastic explosives that large would have been an even larger event. And there's a strong possibility here, based on my reading of the scenario, that the Russian security services may have dodged a bullet. Losing 18 people in a train station bombing is one thing, but losing scores more in a train derailment is another.
And this comes right in a month or two in advance of the Winter Olympic Games in Sochi, which are about 400 miles away. But obviously, if this
is
a big transportation hub, the crowds, everything, the potential is there. Let's put it like that. So what does this force the Russian security forces to try to do? I mean, where does this leave them in all this?
Well, there's two things going on. In the run-up to Sochi, the Kremlin and the Russian security services, including the MVD, the Interior Ministry, the Russian equivalent of the FBI, and the FSB, the Federal Security Services, the successor agency to the KGB, both of those agencies have created what Vladimir Putin has called the Ring of Steel around Sochi. And the idea is to, you know, basically, you know, put in magnetometers at train stations and bus stations to increase the number of checkpoints, to increase the number of individuals manning those checkpoints. They've been very keen on securing airline traffic into and out of Sochi. The problem is that, you know, that ring of steel is only as strong as its weakest link. And corruption is so endemic at the lower and middle levels of the Russian security services, more so in the police than in the FSB. But even then, it's such a concern, and the group involved here has such strong incentives to try to make something happen, or at least to attempt something, that it's hard to see how the Russian government is going to be able to secure all of the venues to the degree that they would like to. It's important to note that, you know, if you're looking at this from the perspective of the insurgent group in the region, again, it's called the Caucasus Emirate, a try and a miss is still a victory for them, because the point there is to sow fear and concern and anxiety in the population. And, you know, with terrorism, it's sort of an all or nothing game. As soon as you have an event, you have a failure. And it's hard to be, you know, it's hard to bat 1,000 in every aspect of life, especially when you've got an adversary that's as ruthless and resilient as this particular group is.
And so, refresh my memory, what is the Caucasus Emirate after in all of this?
Sure. Well, going back 20 years, in 1994, Russia and Chechnya began a war over whether Chechnya would break away from the Russian Federation and form an independent state. And for the last 350 years, the Russians and the Chechens have been fighting over whether Chechnya would be part of Russia or whether Chechnya would go back to being sort of its own self-governing region. During the space of that 20 years, between 1994 and today, they fought two formal wars, two large-scale conventional wars, and now they're fighting sort of a protracted, very radicalized insurgency. And much like what we're seeing in Syria today, what happened with the Chechen cause is it radicalized, it became more marginal, but it also internationalized, or in their case, regionalized. So what started out with a bunch of Chechens trying to create an independent Republic of Chechnya turned into an Islamist movement and then a radical Salafist movement. And as they've become more radical and more marginal politically, they've also reached out to other different groups. You've got to remember about 18 to 20% of Russia's population is comprised of indigenous Muslims. So they've been reaching out to Dagestanis, they've been reaching out to Ingush, they've been reaching out to Tartars, they've been reaching out to ethnic Slavic converts to Islam and trying to pull these people into a movement that would create an Islamic state on Russia's southern border.
You know, the last
very different from where they started, and very troubling for Russia and for the Olympics.
Yeah, absolutely. And the last time we heard some of these stories, this history, was during the Boston Marathon bombings just about a year ago.
Right.
And people are trying desperately, I think, to draw a connection there. Do you think there is one?
No, I don't think there is one. And here's why. Look, at a very superficial level, we have people that have radicalized. And we have people that are using terrorism in order to fulfill their political objectives or their personal objectives. But when you look at what was motivating Zhohar and Tamerlane Tsarnaev in Boston, if you look at the stuff that, you know, Zhohar had written on the inside of the sailboat when the FBI finally captured him, all of that stuff was about U.S. policy in Afghanistan and Iraq. Right. So they might have been from Chechnya and Dagestan. One side of the family's Chechen, one side of the family's Dagestani, but they'd lived there for maybe 18 months since they were 3 or 4 years old. The family actually left and came to the United States to get away from the war because, you know, their parents and their uncles didn't want anything to do with it. What we see with the Caucasus Emirate is a group that started off as a secular nationalist movement, became an Islamist movement, and then it eventually radicalized into this nasty little, you know, Salafist jihadi movement. But their focus has always been on Russia. They've never been operational outside the region. There are some Chechens who have globalized, but we're talking about, you know, tens and talking about dozens of people, not hundreds or thousands of people. And the connections between the two, aside from the fact that people are from the same ethnic group and aside from the fact that people have been blowing things up, no one's been able to tie those operational connections together. And when you look at the objectives they were fighting for, they don't align.
Well, it's a very interesting and very complicated story. Christopher, thanks for taking the time to help us out with it today.
It's my pleasure, Gene.
Christopher Swift is an adjunct professor of national security studies at Georgetown University and an international lawyer at Foley and Lardner.